All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I am your host, Bryce Paul, joined as always by my notorious co-host, Mr. P-I-Z, Aaron Pizza Mind Malone in the house. How we doing, Aaron?
Man, I wish I could match your excitement, but to be honest, I am exhausted and it's only July. I still have another half year to go. I guess this is why traditional worlds and schools all have summer vacations, but there is no rest for the wicked here in crypto.
Oh man. And builders got to build.
That's right. And we're here to do some amazing things in the world. So no sleep for us, no rest, no vacation. We're continuing on to deliver content where, so you can listen to it while you're on vacation. And we're always looking for the next biggest, better thing, the better way of doing things and meeting really, really good people. So I'm really excited for today's guest. Bryce, who do we have?
Man, you know, it's such a great introduction because rain or shine, price is high, price is low. This is a team that's been through it all. This is the CEO and the co-founder of Off-Chain Labs, which is building Arbitrum, okay? A gentleman named Stephen Goldfeder joining us today. Stephen, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. It's our pleasure. It's our honor. It's our duty to the good citizens of Crypt Nation who are tuning in on a biweekly basis here to get a dose of just some crypto education, seeing what's being built right now. Folks that are coming in that, you know, were here maybe during the bull market, but are still here during the bear market and just are believers, right? People that are like you and me. Folks that have kind of found the transforming power of DeFi or the transformative power of, Bitcoin in a hard money, right? And saying, hey, prices might be down, but that's an opportunity to kind of grab market share, whether that's through acquisitions, through continuing to build and double down, maybe bet on yourself, right? Me and Pizza Mind started the Crypto 101 podcast, you know, in the middle of a bear market, right? And so this is really, you know, a lot of people view the down prices as scary and not an opportunity, but a loss of opportunity. But this is really an opportunity. So anyhow, that's a kind of a large preamble, but I keep getting questions and, people reaching out saying, well, what do you guys really think of this bear market? I mean, this is where the builders thrive and this is where people bet on themselves. I mean, that's kind of your story.
Absolutely. I know we've, Arbitrum dates back to about 2013. And so we've been through every part of the market. In fact, when we started thinking about Arbitrum, there was no market. It even predates, the academic project even predates Ethereum. So we're very much in this building good tech, building things that we think is useful for people and people are excited about and people want to use. And the market will be back and we will be there and ready and even better when that happens. But we're continuing to build and continuing to deliver throughout it all.
I had no idea, actually, to that Arbitrum was there since 2013. That's insane.
That's amazing. Yeah.
We started in an academic context at Princeton. So I have my PhD from Princeton and my co-founders, Ed, was a longtime professor at Princeton. And Harry was also a PhD student there with me. And Arbitrum started as an academic project. Actually, if you go on YouTube and look for the first mention of Arbitrum, you'll find the 2014 Princeton class project video, fall 2014. The reason I love mentioning that date is because it was 6 months later in July of 2015 when Ethereum was launched. So we've been thinking about smart contracts for a very, very, very long time and how to scale them well before there was any demand or any need for scale. And, you know, about 2018 was when the company founded. And also, you know, you've seen different market cycles, but we've been here through it all.
So that's where I remember you from. No, just kidding. I never went. They would never let me in.
You look familiar. But
that's so cool. Give us the grand vision of Arbitrum, like from way back when you started at Princeton to where it's come now. What do you guys really want to accomplish with this product?
Yeah, the main vision is really, you know, we believe in the power of smart contracts, power of blockchain technology, particularly programmable smart contracts where you can have the blockchain do, you know, whatever you ask it to do, whatever you program it to do. And it was clear to us early on that one of two things were going to happen. Either like this technology was going to go away, or it was going to become in, you know, increasingly, you know, massive demand. And the piping wasn't strong enough. Their piping wasn't robust enough for the demand that we thought would come. And we believed very much in the second. We didn't think it was going away. We thought it's only going to come increasingly, stronger. And the question was, how do we build better infrastructure that can scale without compromising on the vision we're here in the first place? We have these values about decentralization and security. How can we bring this to the masses, bring this to retail users without compromise? And that's really what we've been about since day one in an academic context. And this is the same thing that's driving us today.
You know, it's funny. We interviewed Ed Felton from Off-Chain Labs. I think, it must have been 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And one thing that is just coming back to mind that I remember about that conversation is I asked him, like, you know, tell me about like smart contracts. And one of the quotes that he that really stuck with me was that possession is 9/10 of the law. And that was kind of something that kind of always stuck with me. And, you know, I think about some of the first principles that you guys build from, and it's really about, you know, self-sovereignty, you know, kind of people being in charge of their own data, their own money, right? And, you know, being fully, fully in possession of their assets, right? And like what we're seeing right now with some of the blowups in the centralized lending space, right? People assuming that they're going to be lending out these tokens at 7% yield or whatever. And then now they can't even access their money. Well, you know, those companies were kind of in possession. You know, you signed that terms of service. You understood that the yield is there by very nature of compensating you for taking on some type of risk. And, you know, with DeFi, which is the space that you guys are really building in, DeFi was, it's all on chain. It's all fully transparent. And the users still own their keys, right? They're still fully self-sovereign in those circumstances. So tell me a little bit about, you know, in terms of Arbitrum and DeFi, where you see, you know, Arbitrum really fitting in, right? What is your exact kind of go-to-market strategy for Arbitrum? Because there's so many different pieces of this puzzle.
Absolutely. So the starting point is Ethereum. We believe very, very strongly in Ethereum as a platform and the smart contract platform as the future. And the key there is really values-based, decentralization, security. To your point, Bryce, you know, when you have smart contracts and DeFi, you really put the control in the hands of users and you don't have to trust centralized entities. And that's not to say that there aren't points of centralization in DeFi, and users should be aware that there definitely are and not everything is created equally. But the vision and the values and, you know, the overall theme of the space is that users really have this control. The problem is, you know, centralization is often very economically beneficial, right? There's just economies of scale and things often get cheaper when you centralize. So how can we give users that security, give them that decentralization, but also at a price point where it makes sense for a retail user. You know, if you have a trade where it costs a user, say $10 for a trade, that or $100 for a trade, that might be okay for a power user that's trading thousands of dollars. But for a user that's just trading one or two or 10 or even $100, that's going to be a really, really big problem. So our question was, how can we bring this to the masses at a point where we can scale? And scale means two things. It means we can have lots and lots of transactions and the network supports that, and also do that at a low cost, at an accessible cost, at an inclusive cost where it's not just a whales game, but your average user can participate as well. And that's where you know, Arbitrum comes in. We're able to provide the decentralization and the security of Ethereum, but at a cost that's much, much lower to users and at a capacity that's much, much higher. So really be, what I like to say is be the retail layer for Ethereum.
That makes a lot of sense. How do we go about security in Ethereum? Because we've seen so many hacks of pools and bridges in the Ethereum ecosystem, not just Ethereum. We don't want to pick on them. It's happened on Solana and many others as well. What do we need to do as an entire industry to make DeFi more secure, where users can have confidence leaving billions of dollars in these pools or on these bridges?
It's a great question. And, you know, so maybe to, you know, one thing to ask yourself is, what is a bridge? Because now they're not all created equally, and bridges sort of look different to different users and for different applications. But a bridge is fundamentally a way to sort of move money from one chain to another chain. The problem is often these chains don't directly talk to one another. So you have these centralized things that stand in the middle and sort of pass information between the chains, right? So imagine you have $100 on chain A, and you want to sort of bridge that to chain B. If the chains don't talk directly, you can't just say, hey, chain A, I'm sending this over, chain B, I'm sending this over to you. You have to have a centralized entity that basically escrows it, and it holds your money in chain A and says, okay, I'll release this in chain B. Now, the problem always with bridges and hacks always happens in that centralized entity. And it doesn't always mean the centralized entity is malicious, but maybe they can be compromised. Or maybe someone can sort of convince both chains that, hey, chain Hey, you know, you compromise a messenger and say, chain A told me that it's that the money's locked there, so you can release it on chain B. Hey, chain A, chain B said the money's locked there, you can release it on chain A. And so bridging is really, you know, often has a very centralized component to it. And that's, you know, often where a lot of the problems happen. And the question is, how can we bridge in a more secure way? And I think that's where rollups are really, really interesting. And I'm, you know, happy to talk more about that.
Yeah, actually, that was going to be my next question was, you know, how do these rollups work?
Yeah, so I'll tell you how the rollups work. On the bridging point, the bridge and rollups is a little bit different because the rollups sit as another layer, often called layer two. So we're a layer two on top of Ethereum. Ethereum is this layer one blockchain. We sit on top of it. We're the layer two. And whereas everything I just mentioned,
and you're a rollup, right? Arbitrum would be considered a rollup.
Exactly. Arbitrum is a rollup. Yes.
Not a ZK rollup.
No, so we're an optimistic rollup. So there's rollups, okay. And then there's sort of two types of rollup, ZK rollups and optimistic rollups. And Arbitrum is the leading rollup today, layer two in Ethereum.
Everybody pause your episode and write down ZK rollup, optimistic rollup. That's your homework. Go Google it. Okay, now pause it and I'll play the episode again.
Yeah, so the question is, so how do rollups work? And particularly, how do they enable a more secure form of bridging? So one thing to notice is, since we're a layer two, we sit directly on Ethereum, we have a much better channel to talk to Ethereum. So when you imagine what a rollup is, what Arbitrum is, it looks like its own chain. It feels like its own chain, but it's actually doesn't have its own like miners or its own consensus. It's sitting on top of Ethereum and it's using Ethereum very heavily. And you do bridge money back and forth between the rollup and Ethereum. But unlike before, where you have sort of these two things that you need someone to talk to each other, because it's built on top of Ethereum, because Arbitrum is itself controlled by an Ethereum smart contract, they can talk directly. And you lose a lot of the risk of a typical bridge where you have to insert another party, insert signers. Because everything is settled directly on Ethereum, Arbitrum and Ethereum have a direct channel. So when something is, you know, when you want to bridge from one to the other, there's a lot less risk. That's not to say there's no risk in a bridge. There's always software risk, and all the listeners should understand that there's always risk. But the risk surface of a rollup bridge is a lot smaller. But what is a rollup basically? So a rollup is it looks like its own chain. You take all these transactions. A user sends their transaction, and it bundles up these transactions. It rolls them up, if you will, and puts them on Ethereum. I mean, you could think of it, but so how does it, if it's putting everything on Ethereum, how does it scale? How do we do better than Ethereum? Hey, aren't we just using Ethereum? And the answer is we use Ethereum much, much more succinctly. We compress what we put in Ethereum a lot. So
it's like in the same way as a roll up, it's like a batch, like, you know, it's batching everything together, making a lot of transactions look like they're settled in one transaction on Ethereum at the base layer, kind of.
So yes, it batches things up on Ethereum and it gets some scale from there.
Pre-processing. It's yes. like the mama bird. It's like the mama bird eating the food and pre-digesting it for the baby.
Yes, it does.
I was going to say this is like the crypto version of zip files, but that's maybe even better.
those are really both good analogies. So yeah, so to use Bryce's analogy, that's exactly right. So all the unprocessed transaction, the zeros and ones go on Ethereum, but then there's all this processing that needs to be done, right? The transaction you could see in a few ways. On the one hand, just like a few bits of data and some zeros and ones, but then its instruction says, hey, Ethereum, go ahead and add these numbers, do this complex computation, store these values. All that happens off chain. All that happens in Arbitrum. We process that and we hand back that food exactly to Ethereum in a way that's already processed. In a way that it doesn't have to do that work. But the magical thing is in a way that Ethereum can still verify it. Right? Ethereum can say, even though I didn't do that, I can see that it's correct. I can see that the output that you gave me from these transactions are correct. And I'm going to leave you. I'm not going to.
That's the beauty of crypto and hashes and all that magic. But exactly. But now Arbitrum, kind of is that buffer layer. So because if it were to do all those transactions settling it on chain, it would be so slow and it would be so prohibitively expensive.
Exactly.
So that's what Arbitrum solves.
Yes. So we take it all off chain. We are able to process it and then use Ethereum only for the minimal amount we use Ethereum. And I'm not going to cheat for the users. They're still going to have to do their homework. But as a hint, where do ZK rollups and optimistic rollups differ? They differ in how they prove this back to Ethereum. How do we get Ethereum to know that what we did off chain is correct? That's fundamentally where they differ. And I'll leave the rest as an exercise. But that's, the beauty of a rollup. It takes all this off chain, but it still enables Ethereum to understand that what was done is correct. And if someone disagrees, they can efficiently resolve that and make sure that Ethereum gets to the right state. And to your point, Aaron, the way that we compress things, we don't only take these batches. We don't just take these batches and append all these transactions together, but we compress them very efficiently. And actually in our upcoming Arbitrum Nitro launch, one of the things that gets a lot better is the way we compress. And we're able to therefore use even less Ethereum space, right? Because if we take the transactions and we make them smaller and smaller and smaller, we're using Ethereum more efficiently. What does that mean for the end user? It means your transaction will cost less because our costs of using Ethereum are less for your transaction.
That's really cool. I wanted to know how people are in projects like, I shouldn't say people, projects like Arbitrum are going to be affected by this big ETH 2.0 update. Is this going to be a competitor, essentially, to the rollups and layer twos? Is this going to augment things? Is it going to make things better, slower, faster, more confusing? What are your thoughts when you're talking with your developers over there?
We're super excited about ETH 2.0. And actually, we're doing all we can to make sure that we contribute what we can and we're excited about it and make sure that it happens, on schedule and anything we can do to sort of help, we're happy to do. And the reason why we're so excited about it is there's a few reasons. First of all, remember, we don't have our own mining. We rely on Ethereum and therefore we don't add really much from an environmental standpoint, but we'll all benefit. We use Ethereum, so we'll all benefit from moving off of proof of work from that standpoint. But more fundamentally, one of the really cool things that's coming along with ETH 2.0 is some really great proposals for much lower data costs. And that means is lower costs to store data on Ethereum. And for Arbitrum transactions, remember, we have this cost of putting data on Ethereum. Every time you do a transaction in Arbitrum, the majority of the cost you pay actually is just for putting data on Ethereum. So if a transaction would cost $10 on Ethereum and it would cost, say, 50 cents on Arbitrum, probably like something like 35, 40 of those cents are just going to Ethereum to post your data. So if we're able to compress that and make the data cost cheaper, then we're going to be in a much, much better spot and we're able to pass along those savings to users. So, fundamentally, and there's some, we need ETH 2.0. And actually, it's not just me saying it. These two things work together. Vitalik Buterin has you know, put out a blog post maybe almost 2 years ago now that said ETH 2.0's vision is roll-up centric. Remember, roll-up, that's that word we said before, which Arbitrum is a roll-up. So ETH 2.0's vision is roll-up centric. And you know, the idea is there's so many users coming to this space. We need scale from wherever we can get it. We need the most efficient layer one, and then we need the most efficient layer twos. And it's these two things working in tandem that's really going to allow us to meet the demand.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That we have today, and that's increasingly coming.
What for, like, from a consumer facing application standpoint, you know, and maybe not even having to do with Arbitrum right now, but in the future, paint us a picture of maybe some of these consumer facing applications that are really gonna, you know, maybe help make people's life more efficient or help make people's life easier in some capacity.
Yeah. So, you know, the nice thing about Arbitrum is we are a platform. And so my role is relatively simple, which is people ask us for two things. We want a great user experience, so fast transactions, and we want lower cost. Right? No one ever comes and says, hey, Stephen, can you get the cost up in Arbitrum a little bit? It's just too cheap, right? Everyone always wants a lower cost and fast transactions. So what that means is, like, you know, we know what we need to do. We put out the tools, but all, you know, the innovation of the application layer, we enable that, but we don't have to guess sort of what's coming next. You know, if you would have asked me, say, 3 years ago, would NFTs and even DeFi be what they are today? I would have said absolutely not. You know, I would have had no idea it was coming. But at the time, even though we didn't know it, we were putting together some of the tools that would enable these things to happen at scale. So I'll tell you some of the things I'm really, really excited about from a consumer perspective. But I'm also saying that, like, there are a lot of smarter people out there with, you know, great ability to build, and we're giving them the tools that they need, but they're going to surpass, you know, anything that we would have imagined with the tools. I'm super excited about DeFi, particularly on Arbitrum. There are lots of really, really great DeFi protocols that are building things that are sort of wouldn't have been possible in layer one, like complex derivative platforms. GMX comes to mind, Dopex, Premia options platform, and things that would just be way too expensive to do in Ethereum, but really, you know, great financial primitives that are much, much more easily accessible for users. And I think we're just scratching the surface. So DeFi is getting, I think, more complex, but also more inclusive at the same time, which is, you know, sort of a paradoxical. Secondly, you know, I think the NFT scene in Arbitrum is something I'm very, very excited about. And lower cost to mint and transfer NFTs with the same or increased security level over other solutions, that's very, very exciting to me. The other thing we're seeing coming on strongly is gaming. Gaming is it doesn't make sense on a layer one platform, right? Having a game where you're paying $10 or $100 to do a transaction in the game, like, it's probably not that fun for most users. But, you know, we're enabling cheaper gaming, and we're seeing lots of, you know, really, really traditionally strong teams building on the blockchain. And the cool thing that they're doing is, you know, rewind 3 years, people were building games that were blockchain first, game second. Now we're seeing people build games that are game first, blockchain second, which means fundamentally they're a good game. They're also on the blockchain. I think that's a really, really great point of maturity. And the last thing that I'll mention, which I think is really, really interesting, is the interaction with social and social communities. We're seeing a lot of social media platforms looking at the blockchain and how they can sort of integrate that into their platforms. I think that will be very, very exciting for users and consumer facing. One company that we're working with very closely on their plans for this is Reddit. As it's well known, Reddit has launched already two communities on Arbitrum testnet for their community points. And I'm really, really excited for further developments there. And I think we'll continue to see a theme, you know, Reddit sort of leading the way here, but I think others are thinking about these very same issues.
That's really cool. There's a lot of anxiety amongst our listenership and community just about simply moving Ethereum from their Coinbase to their hardware wallet and sending a transaction there. It's still a big pain point in crypto to use Ethereum addressing. Even with the naming service, a lot of people have not adopted it yet. Can you give us some advice on just a high level? Where do we go to even do our first transfer of some of Ethereum out of our wallet or exchange onto the Arbitrum chain to begin using some of these applications?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And the answer is there's different places for different users. For those users that like using centralized exchanges and keep their funds there, there are a lot of centralized exchanges that support Arbitrum directly now. For example, Binance, FTX, Crypto.com, Huobi, OKX, and Bybit, et cetera, KuCoin. On all these exchanges and more, you can basically go to your Binance account and say withdraw ETH, and they'll say, hey, do you want to withdraw on Ethereum or do you want to withdraw on Arbitrum? So boom, just like that, you give them your address on Arbitrum, you set up your MetaMask or other wallet on Arbitrum, give them your address, and you can withdraw directly from your centralized exchanges. So basically the same exact onboarding experience as they would from those exchanges to Ethereum. And, you know, we're increasingly having more and more exchanges come on board and support us in this way, which is, you know, very, very exciting. They're also for those users that have funds on Ethereum already. How do they do that? They can go to the Arbitrum bridge, which, you know, the bridge that we host, which is just bridge.arbitrum.io. There are also some really, really good third-party bridges like Hop, Connect, Seller, and a bunch of others across, a bunch of others. You can see the full list of them at the Arbitrum portal. And you can really, really easily just, with a very, very nice UX, go and say, hey, I want to move, say, this amount of ETH or other token, whatever token you want from Ethereum to Arbitrum. And a lot of these bridges actually support multiple networks. So you don't even need to go through Ethereum. You just have these hubs where you can send your funds in between chains. So basically for all types of users, if you're a centralized exchange user, if you like to hold your own keys and keep your funds in Ethereum, you have super easy onboarding onto the Arbitrum platform.
Can you give us the names of some of those hubs again? Because this is something we're going to really need to write down and remember for the long term, not just with Arbitrum, but for everything.
Absolutely. So a good resource for this, if you go to portal, portal.arbitrum.one, so portal.arbitrum.one, and you look at, we have what we call bridges. There are a lot of them, but some of them are across. There's Bungie, there's Seller, there's Hop, there's Connect. And then there are actually protocols that sort of aggregate these bridges. And these are our bridges where, I'll take Hop as an example. On Hop, you can say, hey, I want to move money from Arbitrum to Ethereum or Arbitrum to Polygon. And you can just support multiple networks with a really, really seamless experience. So, similarly for Connect across and a bunch of the Seller and a bunch of the others. And there are really, really a bunch of really, really great teams out there. And I'm sure I omitted someone, which wasn't intentional, but take a look at the portal page and you can see a list of these with some great UXs, give you fast way to move your money between Ethereum and Arbitrum, but often, between many, many chains, just really, really seamlessly.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think the one thing that I hope that we get out of this next cycle, if you will, right? We have the mania cycle. Now we have the build cycle. And I hope something that comes out of this build cycle is just really good, easy UX. Because I've used Arbitrum and all sorts of different crypto platforms, and I'm a technical guy, I get it, but sometimes it's just not so intuitive. And I think the intuition of an iPhone, right? People know to click it. Just my grandma does it. It's so easy. And it took us decades to get to that level. Like the personal cell phone wasn't intuitive when it was a BlackBerry or a PDA, in 1995. So at what level do we get that intuitive nature to crypto?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a few things to say is one, it's a multi-team effort. So we have work to do on our side. For example, Arbitrum gives you instant confirmations, which is already a big plus, right? If you go on other networks, you might have a delay that comes up in your transactions. On Arbitrum, we give users instant confirmation. So they get the experience, when I search something on Google, if I don't get a response in 3 milliseconds, I press refresh.
I'm like, what's wrong? The world's ending. Something must happen.
Exactly. And crypto native users understand that, I might have to wait, 10, 15 seconds, depending on what it is. But to your point, as we go mainstream, that's not a concept that's understood by users, and users want to see fast confirmations. That's something that we give on Arbitrum. But also, wallets have a lot of, there are some great wallets out there, but continuing to cater to the sort of new community, new entrants who aren't as familiar with some of the terms, some of the concept. They might not know what an address is or what a key is. really holding their hand. I think there's work that can also be done with us together with the wallets. But also, you know, to be honest, a lot of what we're talking about is like technology stacks that may get abstracted from users at some point, right? If you look at, you go on your, you know, you talk about your iPhone. If you click on an app on your iPhone, you don't think about, oh, hey, I'm using this and it's calling to the internet underneath. And there's, you know, there's this, all these protocols going on underneath. It's happening on the architecture of my phone. You don't think about that. You just think about like, I ordered food on my phone, or I have a map service that just shows me a picture. So actually, you know, the you know, my friend Nikhil from Alchemy said this well. You know, when you order Uber, you just don't say like, hey, I'm ordering you know, a car on the internet. You just say I ordered a car on Uber. And I think that's sort of the success story that we'll see as well. And you know, to gaming before, like I mentioned, 2017, 2018, a game was blockchain first, game first. Now we're thinking about games that have to appeal to users that don't even care about the blockchain, right? I don't know or care about it. That's the point where I think users really get excited. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Is how do we onboard users like that? You know, how do we, can we onboard products that give you the benefits of blockchain, but also allow you to ignore it? There's some really, really interesting proposals out there, but it's definitely a work in progress. But I do think we're coming more and more and more mainstream here. And a lot of users are thinking one level up of the stack and not worrying so much about the architecture, but thinking more about the application they're using. And, you know, the network that it's on is sort of the thing that they expect to be there, but it's sort of abstracted away from them a little bit.
That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned earlier that you're going to be releasing a big update called Nitro. Can we dive into that a little bit more?
Absolutely. So Arbitrum Nitro is a massive upgrade to our technical stack. And let me just cut what that means for users and what you can expect. It means lower fees. And for those, you know, power users or developers, it'll be easier to sort of run an Arbitrum node and participate in the network. And how do we get these lower fees? So what does Nitro do? One thing it does is it compresses better, right? We were talking before about compression and how what one of the things that a rollup does, and Arbitrum being a rollup does, is takes your transactions and puts them on Ethereum, but does that in a way that's minimalistic and only uses the exact amount of space that it needs. In Nitro, we figured out how to do that even better, how to take your same transaction, but require less of Ethereum's resources to process it securely. And in doing so, you really get to a point where our costs are lower, right? So remember before, a lot of our costs are pass-through. A 50-cent transaction in Arbitrum might have 40 cents today of just pass-through cost. But if we lower that, we also can lower the cost for users. So and lower the fee for users as well. That's one really exciting thing that's coming to Nitro. And the other thing is more technical, but we're able to reuse some of the components of Ethereum more directly. And what that means is it just becomes easier to participate in the network and run infrastructure on the network. And the best thing is for those users that are using Arbitrum today, it's going to be a seamless upgrade and they'll be able to, you know, they'll notice because their fees will go down, but they don't have to like, oh, I have to migrate my coins from Nitro. What do I do? You don't have to, the network will be upgraded and users will reap the benefits, but they won't really have to grapple with the, any of the upgrade themselves. And we're working closely with a lot of the team, you know, the infrastructure teams we work with to make sure that it's smooth for users across really all verticals and anything they're doing on the chain.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Steven, outside of, anything that you're directly working on or, you know, directly invested in, what's one project or maybe one company in the crypto world that you think is having like a tremendous impact that you're like, hey, those guys are doing it right. I really support, you know, that vision or that product.
It's a great question. I might give a slightly non-answer, which is, you know, crypto is never about one company. And even like, you know, the things that we're working on, we can't do any of this ourselves, literally nothing. We build a product, but users need all the infrastructure. Users need all the apps. So I think the theme that I guess I'd like to answer that with is it's really everyone working together, which I think is remarkable. One of the things, we're hiring now and often we bring people in from traditional tech or from outside the crypto space. And people are just baffled by the friendliness of the space and how like we work so closely with other companies and all just align the goal. And even like how closely we are, how close, our communications are you know, with teams that you might think that we have nothing to do with, or, you know, you might think that we don't like, you know, it's really the most friendly space.
It is so collaborative. You're right.
And that's, you know, so I know that didn't exactly answer your question, but I think it's really, you know, I don't want to sort of mention only one team, because like, I feel like everything we're doing wouldn't be possible without the hundreds of teams we're working with. And frankly, it's incredible to me, and still unbelievable that this coordination effort actually is going on and happening. And one of the beautiful things about crypto, actually, one of the killer use cases that people like about crypto is the ability to enable people to coordinate. And on a sort of a, you know, on sort of a very meta level, we see that in just building the infrastructure, this massive coordination problem, and how friendly and collaborative the ecosystem is. And that's one thing, yeah, I hope doesn't go away as crypto matures. Like, I really, really hope that this stays collaborative, because to be honest, it's fun to build in crypto because of this, this culture.
Yeah. It's one of the beautiful things of like open source software, and that being a really foundational, I think, principle, of everything behind it. One of the other questions that I have, kind of in closing, actually, is a simple one. And it's, hey, you're a crypto OG. You've been building, you know, cryptographic protocols since 2013. You've been, you know, teaching computer science at Princeton and putting out, you know, research. And then you've also, you know, built up, you know, an actual usable product and led a team, you know, to find an awesome, you know, product in Arbitrum. And now, you know, with the Nitro update, what's like just a word of advice, a word of wisdom, kind of from heart to heart here to all the listeners of Crypto 101, you know, a word of wisdom to survive the bear market. Cause I think a lot of people are looking at this time and saying, hey, maybe we want to pack it in. Maybe we want to go look at how to do some other kind of stuff except crypto.
The thing I'd share is, remember why we're here and why we got here in the first place, right? Even if you just got into crypto this year, you're reaping the benefits of people that came in much, much earlier and started building years before any of these markets existed, years before we could even imagine. Like, I remember someone said to me the other day, they said, oh, this celebrity, they only ever heard of Bitcoin and Ethereum. And I said, like, the fact that, like, you would have told me like 6, 7, 8 years ago that any celebrity had any idea about what we're doing, like, you know, the whole mindset has shifted. The whole mainstream point has shifted. But I think it's important to remember why we're here. It's about decentralization. It's about security. It's about self-sovereignty. And really, it's about inclusion, including more users and enabling users to participate in you know, different types of applications that they may not have had access to previously. And remembering that, I think, is the most important thing. So yeah, the markets might be down now. But it's not about really, you know, the price of a particular NFT or the yield you're getting in a DeFi protocol. That's, you know, the killer application of today. And I think will be, you know, a very, very strong application going forward as well. But really, the fundamental disruptive nature of this technology, I think, is really, really the values base. We're here for decentralization. We're here for security. We're here because we want to build something that's different and that brings immense, immense value. And that's something that the markets can't affect, right? The price goes up or the price goes down, the values of why we're here, and if we're here for the right reasons, it can't change that. So I would ask users to focus on those values and really, really, really remember that. And hopefully that's encouraging to keep building. And, you know, when the markets go back up, hopefully they'll reap the benefits of that, but the values will be there consistently, market up, market down. And that, to me, is the most exciting reason for being here and why I keep building, you know, every day.
Yeah, man, I could not have said it better. That was a really, really, you know, prophetic and awesome way to kind of close out this interview. This has been a ton of fun learning about Arbitrum and all the amazing advancements that you guys are making. Where's kind of the best place to drive Crypto 101 listeners to the Arbitrum community? Where do you guys live? Is it a Twitter-based, Discord-based, Telegram kind of community?
Yeah. So Twitter and Discord are the biggest, you know, places to sort of engage in the Arbitrum community. Twitter is, if you want to keep on top of Arbitrum updates, who are we integrating with? What are some cool, you know, developments in the ecosystem? Twitter is definitely a great space. Discord is for those who want to take the next step and actually participate in the conversation. And we have a lot of people in our Discord at all levels. Some are developers, some aren't. And I would encourage users or listeners that are interested to go there, ask your questions. You'll be, you know, welcomed with a friendly face and answered. Your questions will be answered. And, you know, don't be embarrassed to ask. The way everyone started off, where, you know, wherever you are today, everyone was there at one point, and the only way we can get to the next point is by asking those questions and, you know, being others helping and pointing you to resources. So I'd encourage you to, you know, come and, you know, engage with the community. And we are super happy to have you as part of our community. And, you know, if you're really, really excited, apply to join our team too. That's, you know, take the real leap into this space.
There we go. There we go. It's good to hear that you guys are still hiring. I see, you know, every other day, oh, more layoffs, more you know, hiring freezes, more offers rescinded. So it's always good when other companies are still hiring.
Absolutely. We are strongly hiring because, you know, we have a really, really bright future to build for. And when the markets come back, that's not the time to start hiring. That's my time to sort of, you know, for all the users to reap the benefits of us continuing to build, you know, markets up, markets down.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. All right, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. Everybody at home, thank you for joining us today. Come on back soon. We're excited to hear more about some of the updates, and we will we'll keep you guys posted on everything good happening here in Arbitrum and Ethereum. Take care.
Thanks for having me.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.